Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the ninth edition of the Triple Wing Hammer Report. And again, I thank all of you for tuning in and trying to make this program as successful as we can. This program is for you, and we just bring the information to you so that you can make your programs better. And again, it's all about the kids. We want to make sure that you're getting the information out to the kids so that that you can become a better coach and your program can get better. You know, as I always say weekly, anything with a wing is lethal. And if you run any type of offense with a wing, that includes triple wing. Double wing, single wing, or wing T. You know, that just causes so much problems for defenses. And we just want to bring all the information out there to people that that are running all kind of wing. You know, as normal, we want to give all of our announcements out, get that out of the way so we can get our guests on. And I hope that a lot of you call in and ask questions, because I think the guest we have tonight is a great guest, Dave Caesar, and we'll get in more into what he does in a few minutes. But just for the announcements, the National Single Wing Coach Association symposium is coming up here. In a couple of weeks, it's going to be in Dumfries, Virginia, June 26th through the 28th, and I'm so excited about getting down there because I know all the information that's going to be disseminated and everything. And guys, tell you, if you don't go to these events, you know, you don't grow. I think each guest that we've had on the show has made mention of that, saying that, you know, they go to events weekly, I mean monthly. They go to as many things as they can. No matter how good they are, they're still learning, and I can attest to that. So that's on the 26th through the 28th of June, and it's $40 $25 for an individual, and $50 if you bring your entire staff. Speakers at that event would be Travis Connors, talking about multiple formation to attack defenses, and a quick kick as a weapon. Derek Miner will be talking about the Princeton system, the Princeton single wing system. Mickey Thomas, he'll be talking about his Stormbridge system and adjustments he's made over the years to make that program continue to stay with the single wing. And the great Sean Aul will be talking about the T-Series. Now, a lot of guys have expressed interest in the T-Series, and if you want to get that up close and about, Sean Aul will be there to answer all your questions. Young Corey Parker, he'll be talking about Dutch Mike Shot Punt and how you use that in the River Rouge system, who was one of our guests on the show about 4 or 5 weeks ago. So, you know, we got some good speakers there. And the legend panel will include Eddie Raisley and George Rakovic. And guys, if you get a chance to meet these people, you would, you know, it would just blow you away. So the cost again is $25 per coach or $50 for your entire staff. And I can't think of a better deal nowhere in the clinic business unless it's free. And you know, these guys can't do these things for free a lot. The Single Wing Conclave is going to be March 6th and 7th in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And again, Todd Ross is the organizer for that event, and he'll be getting those that information up as soon as he can tie all the knots and everything. But that's another great event that each one of you, I think, should get on that to get to that event to learn and to just see how much you don't know about this offense. And then, again, to show us what you do know, because we all out to learn different things. Books that that these guys have recommended and I keep touting over the weeks, if you pick them up and read, they're great books to add to your library. One is Win Forever, Win, Work, and Play Like a Champion by Pete Carroll. The Butterfly Effect by Andy Andrews. Season of Life by Jeffrey. Inside Out Coaching by Joe Herman. And Good to Great by Jim Collins. It's a very old book, but I tell you what, if you want to build relationships, and relationship is the one thing these days that you have to have with your kids, if you want to build those relationships, these are good books to give you that guideline as to how things have changed and how to put yourself in the 21st century as far as dealing with our players, because they are different than what they've been in the past. Again, if you have any suggestion of coaches that you like to hear on our show, and you know is doing a great job, let me know. You know, we'll bring them on and we'll sit down, talk with them, and you know, you suggest, and I'll get them on the show. And again, if you have kids who are doing something great in your program, or got a scholarship or anything like that, you know, I had one former athlete at the school I was at before. He became valedictorian. I knew that kid since eighth grade, and he was valedictorian over at Scotch Branch High School, football player and everything. We like to hear about those academic achievements also. So if you got any kids who are doing great things, let us know so we can give them a shout out on our show here. I think that concludes all of the announcements and everything. And what we want to do right now is bring our guests on. A lot of you, if you're, you know, this guy is no stranger to youth football. And I want to bring somebody on youth football, you know, and I want to bring somebody on who I know is doing, who has done it, and who has built a program, and who has walked the talk. You know, he not only talks about it, but he walks it also, and he's done it. And Dave Caesar is, I met him years ago, and I've been following his progress and following what he does with youth program, and I've been very impressed with it. And I thought it was important that we bring youth, get the youth involved in what we do. And so we're going to start this off with Dave Caesar, and let's see if I can bring him online right here, right now. Dave, are you there?
Yes, I am, Coach. Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thank you for letting us bring you on here. You know, we are more honored than you are honored to be on this show. You know, you elevate this program to another level, I think. For those guys who've been living in Siberia, who's been living in Russia or across the water, could you kind of let people know who Dave Caesar is? You know, kind of tell people who you are, what you've done and everything, and so the guys can get a feel for what and who you are.
Well, I'm nobody special, Coach. I mean, we've met, so you know that. But basically, you know, I'm a youth football guy, and I started a program in inner city Omaha maybe 20 years ago. And basically it was a program to help at-risk kids and reach them through the game of football. So in order to reach them, we really felt we had to have something that made sense and was successful, because there, if you aren't reasonably successful, the kids don't come back. So we wanted something, we had to put together something that made sense, that was successful, that could involve everyone and would help us with retention. And a single wing was it for us. So the net of it is, I've been coaching football, youth football, for about 25 years, had my own program for, I don't know, just short of 20. Started a program there in inner city Omaha with about 400 kids, built it from one to about 400, and then moved to just south of Lincoln, Nebraska, in kind of a rural area, where I've got about 100 kids playing in another program. So I basically gave up that Omaha program, I'm guessing back in 2004 or so, and then I'm coaching youth football here. And basically we had to standardize and build a template so that our coaches could use that to, you know, affect all the boys that were playing for us. And along the way, we basically, you know, were asked to do clinics for Nike and Glacier. And once we got on the clinic circuit, it kind of evolved into books and DVDs. And now that's basically what I do for a living. I've done 180 clinics worldwide, and then, of course, we sell the books and DVDs. So I'm just honored to be able to help, you know, thousands of coaches make sure their kids have a great youth football experience. Is that enough for you?
That starts it off real good.
Okay.
I've just come off the planet Mars, and I want to do build us a football program here in where I live right now, Marion, South Carolina. Where would I start? What would I do as far as getting this football program started?
Well, that's a good question, because I didn't know how to do that when I started. I started two programs from scratch, and when I did, that was pre-internet days, so there really wasn't any place to go. You can go to www.winningyouthfootball.com, and there's a free 170-page book you can download, which basically shows you from A to Z how to get started, you know, starting your own 501(c) and basically, you know, developing a mission statement and a board of directors and recruiting coaches and recruiting players and finding places to play and doing funding and all the things that we made mistakes with along the way and kind of figured out, it's all there. So basically, you benefit from all the mistakes I made. It's not an easy chore, but it's really all about figuring out what your mission is, what your goal is, and then putting forth a plan to make it all work. And then, of course, attracting some talent around you that has skills that you don't have. And then lots of prayer. I mean, that worked well for us anyway.
Now, you mentioned a mission statement. You know, a lot of guys I've talked to, they talk about trying to run a couple of plays here and then get a couple of guys out, good athletes and everything. And I always thought that was the wrong way to go by doing it. How important is that mission statement in there?
Well, that's the most important thing, because if you don't have a mission statement, you really have no way to define success. So, I mean, if you have a mission statement, number one, you spell out how you define success. And then the mission statement pushes you when you're trying to allocate resources or figure out where to invest time or figuring out what it is that you want to do. You always look to that mission statement and say, you know what, how does this help us accomplish our mission? And our mission, again, our mission isn't better than anybody else's. Yeah, it's just our mission. And our mission is to develop a love and appreciation in the game and our players so they can continue to play the game that teaches life lessons like no other. Now, underneath that mission statement, in order for us to meet that mission, to make sure that the kids gain those life lessons, is retention. And we can't retain unless we're reasonably successful. So in my mind, we want to be successful as a team, and we also want to make sure that each of our players have a good experience, and we figure out something that they can do where they can point back and say, you know what, I can do this, and this adds team value, whether it's being a good teammate or being a crab blocker or whatever it is. We figure out something they can do so they feel good about the contribution they make, so they continue to play the game. Because in my mind, we're judged not only in youth football, of course, not the high school level, not like you guys or college or pros, but youth football, we're judged by, in my mind, wins and losses. You know, that basically validates what you're doing or not. You know, validates what you're doing makes sense or not. And then secondly, retention. Are the kids coming back? You know, in my mind, we want to win all of our games and we want to retain all of our kids, and that's how I define success.
You I've read your 173-page book, and I've been very impressed with it. A lot of high schools can use that structure you have right there. But you talk about organizational structure in your book. Could you kind of describe how you organize, how you structure your program?
Well, early on, it's kind of a dictatorship because early on, you're not very good. You know, you don't have a lot of depth, so you have to end up wearing a lot of hats and not having a lot of pride in emptying the garbage or cleaning up the stadium or doing those types of things. But you basically have to, have somebody that's in a leadership position who can, the president who's setting the vision. Then you have to have somebody from a financial standpoint. And again, at some time early on, when we had one team and 36 kids, when we had five teams and 200, I'm sorry, not 200 kids, we had five teams and about 125 kids, I was doing this all myself. But as time goes on, you have to attract guys that can do the financial thing, guys that can do the PR thing, guys that, can manage the equipment, guys who can handle the coach training, guys that can, you have to figure out, and you have to target people within the community that can fulfill those particular roles, and you need to recruit them long term. So some of these guys that I got, I recruited them for 4, 5, 6 years. It wasn't something where we opened the doors and all these great people came in. Number one, we targeted them, we recruited them, but we also built some of those people internally, and that's really, how I, came about the books and DVDs to train our coaches. But we also, I had to do some training when it came to building up some of the infrastructure of our guys along the lines of equipment and finance and those type of things as well.
And you talk a lot about the board. You got a board of directors. What is their responsibility in there?
Well, the board basically just provides some leadership when it comes to tough decisions that we have to make. And when we have a tough decision that needs to be made, we like to get input from a variety of people. So when you run things as a dictatorship, you can get a lot of things done and done very quickly. However, sometimes you don't always look at all the different aspects and different sides of the coin. So in my mind, the board of directors just helps set the high level, it helps with the high level decision making of the organization. And for us, we've taken a variety of different folks from different walks of life to help add value and opinions to those decisions.
And that has worked well for you over the years?
Yes, it has. But early on, you're not going to have that. And you just have to make do with what you have, because you can't just open the doors and think, you know what, I'm going to have this great board of directors. The board of directors were really built over the course of time. And those are people that you know and you respect and you can trust, and that, you can count on the fact that they've got the best interests of the kids at heart. And again, you can't build that overnight. That takes time. And there are people that won't even be on your board until you build some, reputation. And we didn't really have that type of reputation until we had, 200 or 300 kids.
Mm-hmm. I talk to our kids a lot, no matter where I'm at, about separating yourself from the pack. You can't be great until you get away from the pack and start doing different things. In other words, fly like an eagle. What do you do to set your program apart from anything else for the success that you've had in the past with your programs?
Well, if you compare us to other programs, we just have a incredibly high standard of excellence in everything we do. So when it comes to doing anything on the football field, we're extremely precise, okay? I mean, the level of precision that we require is unlike any other that I've seen, with the exception of probably my friend Jeff Moret down in Port St. Lucie, Florida. I mean, I've watched hundreds of teams practice and, thousands of teams play. He's probably the closest we are to requiring such a high level of precision. Secondly, our pace. Just the pace of our practices just blows people away, because, I've done 180 clinics all across the country, but I also have helped maybe 70, 80, 90 teams with little mini camps, and people are blown away by the pace that we have. So our precision and our pace but also just our level of commitment to excellence. I mean, you know, we could win a game 36-6 and we're totally disappointed. And what I mean by that is we want to play to our potential, and our potential has nothing to do with the opponent we play. It has, the potential is just like, you know, bowling or golf. You're playing against yourself on every particular game. So we don't care. I mean, in my mind, you know, the wins and losses take care of themselves, but we really want to play to a level of excellence and to, of perfection. And each team has its own, you know, its own cap, and we wanted to play to that cap. Most guys don't understand how high that cap can be. And so we want to play to that level of excellence. And, you know, we can lose a game, you know, 28-20 and play great, and I'll be satisfied with that. And, again, we could play a game and win 48-8, and I'll be very disappointed, because we want the kids to play to a level of excellence and a level of precision and a level of, you know, their potential that most people really don't understand.
You mentioned two things in setting your program apart in your book, and two of my babies, things that I stress daily. One is academics, and the other one is character. Could you talk about those two? How does your academic program work, and what do you do to develop the character in your kids? And I got a follow-up question to ask, you know, as it goes further than that.
Sure. Well, I'll start with academics and then go to character. First of all, academics is important, especially at the youth level. You want to make sure. I mean, we do a weekly academic accountability report, or we have done for years, and then we also do an academic reward system. So it includes helmet stickers and different things. We reward the kids weekly based on their academic performance. Secondly, we do a year-end award. And in Omaha, when I coached in the inner city, we gave out computers. I think we gave out, I don't know, 200 or 300 used computers based on kids achieving a certain level of excellence in the classroom, and then perfect attendance, and then some other things. So we want to make sure that we help the kids understand that academics are important, and secondly, we want to reward them for that. The second thing is team chemistry and character. It really is two things, chemistry and character. Chemistry is really how do you bring your teams together, and you can do it, and you can do it in a methodical way, we do. And then secondly, is character, is helping kids develop character. Now, a lot of the character in youth football, people think it can be caught. I mean, it's automatically there. And absolutely part of it is perseverance and hard work and commitment. Most of that's there intrinsically if you participate in a competitive sport for a period of time. But there's other things that have to be taught. And we talk about selflessness, and we talk about being a great teammate, and we talk about being coachable. And we have a weekly theme. So we have a weekly theme, and there's a weekly email that goes out to the players talking about that theme. There's a little poster that's printed out. We have a banner on our fence that talks about or that has that particular theme in place. And then we reward kids based on that theme weekly. So we have Thursday nights, we have a little awards thing that we stole from Tony Allen. You know Tony, I'm sure you've been to all the conclaves, you know Tony. And we use this little rock method. I'll steal from anybody, Leonard. If you have a good thing, I'll steal it from you. And and we, of course, let people know Tony is the guy that invented this thing. And then we give out these rock awards. They're our foundation awards. So let's say the week's lesson is about perseverance. We talk about a little lesson goes out that talks about Rudy Rudiger. We have a deal on persistence. We have a deal on coachability. We have a deal on selflessness. And then we have our former players come in. We have kids that are still playing at the university level, and they talk about these specific lessons. So it's important to us. In my mind, the reason we're so great isn't necessarily all about the single wing, although I think it plays a big part. It's really how we teach, the methodology that we teach, the precision that we have in place, the pace that we have, and the way we bring teams together. I mean, that is really key. Team chemistry is where, in the end, and team character is what brings you through those tough games.
And you work well with the high schools and with the middle schools and all those other schools in your area. Is the cooperation pretty good between you and those schools and the coaches there?
Well, it really varies, Coach. You know, in Omaha, we were in open enrollment areas. So, and I had 400 kids. So our kids went to 8 or 9 different high schools. But the high school that we were closest to and the place we played our home games on, we had a very, very, very close relationship, even though not a lot of our players ended up going there because, again, it was open enrollment. and the kids were going to the schools that were the most successful in football. So there we had a very, very close relationship. Here I think we have a reasonable relationship. The high school had never – I don't think they had a winning season in 10 years prior to West getting here. Two years ago they played in their state championship game at Class B, and last year they made the playoffs. So the players we've had coming through who are used to winning I think have been a very positive impact on their program, and I think they're appreciative of that. They just want the kids to show up, you know, with good fundamentals, good, you know, if they can block and tackle and they're excited about playing, that's all they want. And I know they're getting that from us because, you know, we have 95% retention. We just don't run kids off.
Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of carryover? You mentioned you had some kids playing at the university and everything. Is there a lot of carryover with the academics, that stuff that they've learned from you, and the character development? Does that carry over into the high school?
Well, I think so. The kids that we have playing at the university level, every single one of those kids is pretty good in the classroom. I mean, these are all B to A students, and all those kids were really just hardcore character kids. I mean, you know, like the kid Nolan Graham that we have that it's a preferred walk-on at Nebraska this year, him and Austin Rose both, they were two of 18 players that were preferred walk-ons at Nebraska, and at Nebraska, walk-ons get a real chance. And both of those kids had great grades. Both of those kids were team players, and both of those kids, you know, I could definitely depend on. How much we had to do with that, I'm not really sure. I mean, both came from good families, but, you know, I got invited to their graduation parties, and they claim that we had quite an impact, but I have no idea. I think they were just great kids, and they came from great families. Maybe we were reinforcing what was happening at home. I'm not sure. But when I coached in Omaha in the inner city, we could see definitely where, you know, there wasn't much support at home, and we were impacting in a pretty major way.
Mm-hmm. The kids that you had in Omaha, right? The inner city, that's where you had the kids at? In
yeah,
Omaha?
Inner city
kids?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those were predominantly black teams that you had and everything there?
Well, it really varied, Coach. I started the program right next to the largest housing project in the city of Omaha. They had about 400 units. That's a pretty tough deal, and that's where we started. But we outgrew that area, and there was actually, you know, shootings in that park, and we basically had to move. And within about a 3-mile radius, we had about 400 kids. So it varied a little bit. Like right in the projects, we were probably, you know, 70% black and 20% Hispanic and 10% white. But across the 400 kids, we were probably about 40% black, about maybe 30% Hispanic and 30% white. Most of our kids, mm-hmm. probably 80% of our kids, either walked or rode their bikes to school to practice.
Mm-hmm.
I would say about 90%, I'm sorry, because that's why we had to be near their neighborhoods, because we didn't have a lot of parental support where we were at there. And that, now I coach spoiled rich brat kids just south of Lincoln, Nebraska, and there we've got, like, you know, we've got all the parents show up, so it's a total different demographic.
Uh-huh. Did you have a major impact with those kids in Omaha?
I think so. My wife and I, we used to, you know, take a group of maybe 8 or 10 of these guys to each of the games, because they didn't have transportation to the games, and then we would have them, we would eat dinner with them as a family after the games were over. We had some of these kids over at our home, and we had kids, you know, do work for us. So those kids, I think, we impacted in a pretty dramatic way. Unfortunately, with 400 kids, it's really tough. I mean, it was really tough to interact and impact each of those in a real dramatic way. We tried to leverage some of the things that we were doing, but it's really tough. I mean, we provided a safe haven. We played it. We provided a place where they could have some success and could be excited about something they were doing that was very positive, provide some awards and those types of things. But when it comes right down to it, in my mind, it has to be one-on-one in order to make a deep impact. And I could only do that with the kids I was coaching myself.
And that says we're into the next question. The people that you have around you, the volunteer coaches, your assistant coaches, what process do you use to pick those guys? I mean, do they have to be at a certain standard?
Well, in Omaha, it was pretty difficult because we were, 70% of our kids came from single-parent families. We were pretty desperate. We didn't really have any coaches. That first year, I had 36 kids all by myself, and it was very difficult. So there, basically, if you could pass a background check and if you were breathing, we would take you, and then we would train you how to be a coach. So we did certainly had guys who had some football experience, but we had other guys who didn't have that much experience. So that's basically how I came up with a template that, hey, if you got an IQ above 90 and you follow this, template to the T and do exactly what it says, you're going to have reasonable success. I mean, that's how we started it. And over the course of time, we got some publicity and we did some other things and we were able to attract some decent coaches. But early on, those first few years, it was difficult. Out of 90 coaches, I mean, I probably had, 20 guys that were halfway decent, and the rest of the 70 we probably trained. Where mm-hmm. I'm at now, in the different demographic, we have more volunteers, but again, they vary in ability. And some of those that we have that have football backgrounds, they just don't know how to coach youth football, and they don't know how to reach youth. So we've had guys that were, even in Omaha, but here as well, that maybe were football guys, but the youth game and the adult game are two different things. And it doesn't matter what you know. It matters what the kids know. And can you transfer that knowledge to the kids? And secondly, is the knowledge that you're transferring make sense for youth football? Because youth football is a lot of different, different game. We have minimum play rules. We have different defenses that we play against. We have a different mindset. We have a different, mission statement as well, in my opinion. So I guess long way around answering your question, we still train them down here, but we probably have more guys with football experience here than we did when we were up in Omaha. I had 90 coaches up there. Down here, I only have 20.
Okay. Now, let me ask, did you leave that program in Omaha intact, or did it die, or what happened to that program?
That's a great question. I left it intact, and when I left it, we left it with, $10,000 or $11,000 in the bank, and the things were all in good shape. And we left it in the care of some good people, but unfortunately, they went away from the template. When I was there, we were winning at an 81% winning clip, so that was a combined winning percentage. We won all three age groups at the A level there in the league that we were in. It was an 84-team league, largest league in the state at that time. And so I left it in real good shape, but slowly over time, they kind of went away from the things we had in place. And now instead of 400 kids or so, I think they've got about 100 or so. And they went from a combined 81% wins to they're winning less than half their games now. So they're doing some positive things. It's headed by a kid that really loves children. I mean, a guy rather that loves children. He's doing it for the right reasons. They just haven't had the success on the field that we had.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thought I would ask that. Now, you talk a lot about your retention rate. How do you keep that retention? How did you keep them? How did and do you keep that retention rate so high?
Well, number one has to be a focus, Coach. I mean, that's number one, is you have to say, you know what, that's our goal. We want to retain all these kids. And some of these guys say, well, football isn't for some kids. It is for some. It isn't for some. It's not for everybody. I think that's BS. I think we can make football interesting and appealing to virtually anyone. And what I mean by retention is the kid starts the first day of practice, he ends the season, and he ends up signing up to play the following year. And if you do things right, if you involve everyone, okay, if you let all those players know that you care about them as individuals, no matter what kind of value they add to the team, they're going to be interested in participating. And if you coach them up, you don't coach up just the good kids. You don't coach up just the average kids. You coach everybody up, and you make them all know that you care. If you do that and you figure out a way to help each one of those kids add value to the team in some way. You figure out something that they can do where they can add value and feel important and feel successful and feel like they're part of the team. then you can have success. And I'm not talking about playing everybody the same amount, okay? I want to win, okay? And I'm not going to play Joey and Tommy the same amount just because Joey and Tommy are both good kids. I'm going to play the better player over the weaker player, but I'm going to figure out a way to get the weaker player on the field a reasonable number of plays and where he has legitimate value and he feels important and he feels good about his football experience.
What would be a reason a kid won't come back to you and play?
Well, it's not me, but I because we get almost everybody back. I mean, you know, in the last 6 years, I think personally I've only lost two kids. So the reason most kids won't come back to play is poor coaching. I mean, it's number one is poor coaching. The poor coaching goes along the lines of just guys that can't run decent practices, guys that can't keep the kids' interest. Having fun. I mean, fun is not a four-letter word. Fun is a good word. Fun is a positive word. You can figure out ways to have fun at practice without making it a big party. And our kids enjoy coming to practice. I mean, we practice less than half as much as our competition, but we always get more done because we have such fast-paced practices and we're investing in doing the right things, okay? We're not investing in just spending 20 minutes doing conditioning and doing an hour of scrimmaging and those types of things and doing a bunch of calisthenics and stretches and those types of things. We just really value time. So time is important. Letting them know that they're valued and they're an important part of the team is important. Doing some of the things like the character development things are all important. And in the end, it makes you a better football team. It's just not building up those minimum play kids because you're good players. When your good players see that they're not valued based on how great a football player they are, but their value is based on the fact that you just love them and care about them regardless of what value they add to their team, they're going to play hard. They're going to listen. They're going to care. If you do those kinds of things, you're going to have a successful football team. And, you know, people don't want to hear that. They just want to go into X's and O's and all this nonsense. But I'm telling you, if you can get that right, you can win lots of football games. It doesn't matter what you run. You know, you want to talk single wing, and I love it, and it's great. But I'm telling you, I can win with anything if I get kids to come together that way.
You remind me of a coach that I met last year. And I read a lot about let me ask you, where did you get the coaching bug at?
My coaching bug? What?
The coaching bug.
I'm sorry. Oh, coaching bug. Oh, coaching bug. Okay.
Yeah.
Bug. Okay. Well.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's the Carolina Geechee coming out of me.
Oh, that's okay, Coach. I'm fine. I love Carolina. It's one of my favorite places. But the coaching bug, well, I became a Christian in 1996, and I really felt God was leading me to do this, and is my mission to help reach kids. And so that's basically where I got my interest in doing this and forming my own program. I mean, I coached with a buddy of mine when I moved from Texas back to Nebraska, and he just asked me to coach, and it was okay. It was fun, but it was really 96 when I really felt the Lord was calling me to do this specific thing to reach kids in a specific way. So that's it for me, Coach.
You mentioned Coach, close to Carolina, Muglia. I think that's how you say his name.
Joe Muglia.
Remind me of Joe Muglia. Yeah, Muglia. I call him Coach Joe every time I see him.
Yeah.
But you remind me so much of him with the passion you have. But did you play football in the past, or did you have you didn't coach on a high school level or anything? You just got into youth coaching.
Right. Now, I played youth ball. You know, and I had a good youth football experience. I had played for a couple of really good coaches. Excuse me. I played high school football. Dave Remington was my locker mate, my center, and I played a couple years at Division II ball. I use the word played loosely because I wasn't very good, and I ended up only playing on the team for 2 years, and then I ended up transferring to Texas A&M where I didn't play football, and that's where I finished my education. But Joe Muglia is just interesting in the fact that he's obviously a very successful businessman over at Ameritrade, which was based in Omaha, and I think Joe takes a lot of what he learned in the business arena and management and applies it to the football field. He was a consultant at the University of Nebraska, and, of course, I've done some work there too. But you know, he really brings that business knowledge and a lot of the things that, you know, I ran a $20 million operation, you know, consulting and IT company in Omaha, and I applied a lot of those business practices to what I do in football, and in my mind, a lot of it translates.
Well, you know, when I was doing the research on you and everything, and I was thinking about Joe, and I said, boy, they are similar into how they approach the game. You know, not exactly the same, but, you know, are similar coming from a business background and everything. Big thing in the country these days is this thing we have now with the concussion, especially at the youth level. Have a lot of kids not played from your program that you've seen or any program because parents are not afraid of the concussion thing? Or how are you handling that challenge?
It's not been an issue for us because in the area that we're at, it's a little different. And we really educate the parents on how we do things differently. You know, my own personal teams, I've only had one concussion in the last 25 years. And really, a lot of that has to do with how we practice and how we teach the kids. About half of our practices for the last 18 years have been without the helmets on. So if we have a two-hour practice, you know, for 60 minutes, our helmets are off. We just figure out lots and lots and lots of ways to get the helmets off because the kids do not want to get their face in contact. And if they keep their face out of contact, they're really good at dropping their hips. And for us, it's all about toes on toes, dropping the hips, and keeping the head out of contact. And we do that when we do a lot of fit and freeze type things. So when we're practicing, almost everything ends in a fit, a freeze and fit, where they get into a hit position and we're fitting up, and we do thousands and thousands of reps over the course of the season doing that. So our kids get really, really, really good at dropping their hips. It isn't about just making sure you don't go head to head. It's toes to toes, hips dropping those hips, and doing thousands of repetitions so that muscle memory gets there. Now, getting to the macro question, yes, I mean, we haven't lost anybody. We're not losing it. We're full. Our teams are full. Okay, I got room for 100 kids, and they're all signed up, and we were full. All of our teams were full in November. Okay, we had an open house thing, and you know, you come in, you sign up, and all the kids get a flyer at school, and we haven't had any issues filling up our teams. But nationwide, there's been a drop of maybe 10% to 15%. And it's a perception issue as well as a real issue. First of all, if you look at the statistics, and I was on, you know, Friday Night Tykes and talked about this and went through all the stats, but when you look at the younger age football, there's significantly fewer injuries at the lower ages than there are at the high school ages. So if you tell kids, hey, you know, don't start playing football till high school, well, when they start playing football at the high school level, that's where the injuries really start. At the youth level, the injuries are very, very minor. The numbers are very, very low. And for the most part, they aren't significant injuries. And then, you know, I mean, that's the first part of it. And then secondly, it's just a perception issue. I mean, you know, in the United States here, people think, well, all these pro football players are dying in their 50s. Well, the fact of the matter is the NFL Players Association has done a study, and the average NFL player lives 10 years longer than the average American male. So, you know, it's just part of it's a perception issue, and part of it is, you know, hey, we need to teach our kids to be, you know, safer on the football field. And we also need to inform our parents.
Well, education is key to that. You know, I had to do the same thing here. You know, everybody, you know, they want to protect their kids, and I get that. But I think a lot of times we sit down and just educate people as to what's going on.
Yeah.
In a great program, and every parent is happy as they can be. Am I correct?
Coach, could you repeat that? I'm sorry, you're kind of breaking up on me there, the last sentence.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, everybody, all your parents are happy with where you're going with your kids playing time. They don't come fuss at you. They don't ask questions. All the parents are happy. Am I correct?
No. Well, they are all happy, but really part of it is all about setting expectations. So if you set expectations, I really don't get many complaints. I really don't. because I have the same speech that I give. I have a 30-minute parent meeting that happens before every season, okay? And it's a mandatory parent meeting. They all show up. It's the first practice. And I just lay out the parameters. I lay out our mission. I lay out our goals, lay out, you know, how kids earn positions and earn playing time and how we handle discipline and those types of things. And it's a take-it-or-leave-it proposition. We don't negotiate back or forth. And it's just they can see over the course of time that we know what they're doing and we care about their child. And we get them all reasonable playing time. You know, if you play for my team, you're going to get twice as much as the minimum usually. And we're going to spread it around a bit. And they just have a good experience. Now, we can't please everyone, and we don't try to please everyone. And we let them know, hey, if this isn't right for you, then, you know, go somewhere else because this isn't a negotiable situation. And we do it as diplomatically as we can.
Dave, do you have other youth programs in the area that you are right now?
Are there other? Do we compete with other youth programs? Is that your question?
Yes, in your area where you are right now.
I'm sorry, you're breaking up again, Coach.
I'm sorry. I don't know what's happened here. All right, could you hold on for a second? Could you hold on just for a second? Let me do something here. Okay, I was asking you, do you have other youth programs in your area where you are right now?
Yes, there's another youth program that practices on the very same practice fields that we practice on. They just practice, or they're adjacent to us. The complex that we're at has one about four fields, and you know we take up a couple of fields, and they take up a couple. There's also so that they practice and they play games in the very same game fields that we play on. So we play on alternating weekends. They can also go into Lincoln. Lincoln's about 20 miles from here, and they're having a few kids that have gone there. They want to participate in that particular league, the Lincoln Midget Football League. So we compete with probably two different programs. And then, of course, the middle school, we compete a bit with them because we have a 7th and 8th grade team, and we compete a bit with them. So, yeah, competition is good, and we like having competition. And the reason being is if a player doesn't like playing for us, we do not want them to quit playing football. The 5% that drop out, very few drop out, but the 5% that do, you know, we want to play somewhere else because maybe they can reach them in a different way than we could. Are you there, Coach?
I don't know what it is. I haven't tuned that much talking today. You keep the parents informed of just about everything that you do. That's why you keep them down.
Well, I'm not sure. Again, you're breaking up. But we, as for communicating with parents, I mean, I'm not sure that we over-communicate anything or more than anyone else does. We just set those expectations right off the bat, and then we don't vary from that at all. So I'm not sure, you know, the parents are welcome to come to practices. We have a lot that attend our practices here. A lot of what they see, I think they're probably pretty happy with. All the kids are getting involved. And there's some things that they probably struggle with a bit because, again, we hold our kids to really high-level precision. But at the end of the day, their kids are having fun, their kids are being involved with something positive, and they're having success both as a team and individually. So I think it's a good experience for you have to ask our parents, but for the most part, I think they're coming back. They're voting with their feet, so most of them are coming back.
The single wing.
Why the single wing?
Yeah, why did you pick the single wing to run with your station?
Okay. Well, part of it was, again, I wanted to standardize for all of our teams. So, I think when we started with the single wing, we had five teams, but I knew we were going to grow because we had a waiting list of like 200 kids. So I needed to make sure that whatever we put in place met a bunch of criteria. And the criteria I was looking for was, number one, that it was fun and it was different. We wanted to make sure that our kids, the teams we had, could compete regardless of what kind of talent they had. So, you know, I'm an old I formation guy, and I ran Veer, and, you know, we had a good quarterback, we had a good I back, we had pretty good teams, but when we didn't, we struggled a bit. And so I didn't want to have that. I wanted to win all the time, you know, whether we had good players or not. But I also knew that there would be situations where we would have groupings of kids that were fairly good and fairly athletic. So I wanted the system I had in place that could be successful not only for the teams that didn't have a ton of talent, didn't have a lot of size and speed, but for when we did have that, when we had unique groupings of kids where we had size and speed, that it could accommodate for that talent, and we wouldn't be hamstrung based on the fact that we were running kind of a poor man's offense. So in my mind, the single wing was a good fit. You know, unlike a lot of single wing teams, we do like to throw the ball. I mean, we probably throw a lot more than a lot of single wing teams. But again, our whole goal is to score points and win games. So some years we may have 6 touchdown passes, and next year we may have 16. It really varies based on the talent that we have. And again, the defenses we play as well.
Your kids enjoy the single wing?
Well, I think they do. It's kind of their identity. All of our teams run it. You know, I have 4 teams this year. We all run it. We run it from the 3rd grade all the way up through the 8th grade. So it's an identity. It's different. You know, we play in a 110-team league, and they, you know, all the teams know that we run it. So it's different. I mean, less than 3% of the youth teams across America run the single wing. Another reason I like it is everybody gets the ball. I mean, we get ahead by 4 or 5 touchdowns, we just put a different quarterback in every play, and we just run power off tackles. So, you know, the last 6 years, every single one of my players has carried the ball. And, you know, some years we've had as many as 15, 16 different kids score touchdowns. You know, it's pretty common that we'll have 12 or 13 different kids score touchdowns. Of course, you know, I'm not letting everybody carry when it's a tight game, but we get up by 4 or 5 mm-hmm. touchdowns, I can get anybody the football. We just run the power off tackle. They all know one play.
Do you ever have any pushback by your coaches when you first implemented the single wing?
Yes, we did. The answer to the question is yes, because it was a bit different. But once they saw the success and the fact that there are other teams out there that are having a lot of success at it, you know, they're seeing the Pop Warner and AYF national championships and seeing lots of teams, you know, winning with it. In fact, you know, 1 year, I was there a couple years ago, and it was Friday night, Championship Friday, and there were 8 teams playing, and 3 of the 8 teams were running my system, you know, single wing. They were on TV, and this is, you know, the best out of, what, 400,000 kids out there playing, and here, you know, you got a final 8, and 3 of them are running our stuff. You see Apopka, Florida, 8A, Florida High School, the biggest, you know, biggest in the state and probably the best football, you know, football state in the country, and they're winning state championships with it. So you have to inform them a bit, and some are a bit skeptical, but once they see our kids having success and seeing average kids scoring 30, 40 points a game consistently, not just every once in a while, they buy in. So it takes time.
Mm-hmm. Your parents, early when you first implemented the single wings, did they push back also, you're not getting my kid ready for the future or whatever? Did you hear much of that?
I didn't. You know, we were in the inner city, and we didn't really have a tremendous amount of parental support, so I didn't get much pushback. Plus, I wasn't charging the kids anything to play, so it was free. You know, I didn't charge the kids anything to participate. So what are they going to do, get their money back, you know? So anyway.
That's what that is, going to keep the parents back.
Yeah. And I'm just not one that really cares that much about what people think of me. It's like, I'm just going to do what's right and let the chips fall to where they may. I don't really worry about being popular or all that nonsense.
Uh-huh. Well, you're my kind of man, I tell you. Well, Dave, I'm just laughing at those poor kids in all my parents. No, I'm sad to see that program went down, but I hope that guy who you have that can get a build up, because you put a lot of heart and soul into getting that program right down there.
Right on. Well, hey, Coach, the best of luck to you, and I really appreciate your show and what you're doing. And if there's anything I could personally do for you at any point in time, just make sure you give me a call. I'd be happy to help you. Okay.
I appreciate you coming on, Dave, and again, thank you so much. And I tell you, you just put this show on.
going up on the page again and just put it on the level, and I appreciate that.
All right.
And
have a great
you just
day.
Have a good night, man. Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
That book that he has, you know, you get some good information from that. If you're planning on building the youth program, and you know, the man has done it. You know, he's done it. We have him successful too. So go and download the book and just get us information so that you can help your kids to become successful and make them better than what they already doing. Next week we have the great Mark Bliss from Arkansas. Old school from Arkansas. He'll be on tonight. Mark Bliss from Conway Spring High School in Kansas, where he won four consecutive state championships, I believe, running a single wing. So Mark will join us next week. And again, we hope that you tune in again next week. And thanks for tuning in tonight. You make my day. You make Sunday. In August, schedule now. So let me know. And so we can get those people and get them online. Until next week, have a good night. Again, take somebody a hug and tell them that you love them. Have a good night, people. Bye-bye.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking. What a wonderful world. Yes, I think.